With Johnny handling the organization's day-to-day activities, I met with more black ministers in the area, hoping to convince them to join the Developing Communities Project. It was a slow process, for unlike their Catholic counterparts, most black pastors were fiercely independent, secure in their congregations, and with little obvious need for outside assistance. Whenever I first reached them on the phone, they would often be suspicious or evasive, uncertain as to why this young man with a Muslim name wanted a few minutes of their time. And a handful I met with conformed to the prototypes found in Richard Wright novels or Malcolm X speeches, sanctimonious graybeards preaching pie in the sky, or slick holy rollers with flashy cars and a constant eye on the collection plate. For the most part, though, once I'd had a chance to meet these men face to face, I would come away impressed. As a group, they turned out to be thoughtful, hard-working men with a confidence, a certainty of purpose, that made them by far the best organizers in the neighborhood. They were generous with their time, interested in the issues, surprisingly willing to open themselves to my scrutiny. One minister talked about a former gambling addiction. Another told me about his years as a successful executive and a secret drunk. They all mentioned periods of religious doubt, the corruption of the world and their own hearts, the striking bottom and shattering of pride, and then finally the resurrection of self. A self alloyed to something larger. That was the source of their confidence, they insisted, their personal fall, their subsequent redemption. It was what gave them the authority to preach the good news. Had I heard the good news, some of them would ask me, do you know where it is that your faith is coming from? When I asked for other pastors to talk to, several gave me the name of Reverend Wright, the same minister Reverend Phillips had mentioned that day at his church. Younger ministers seemed to regard Reverend Wright as a mentor of sorts, his church a model for what they themselves hoped to accomplish. So, toward the end of October, I finally got a chance to pay Reverend Wright a visit and see the church for myself. It sat flush on 95th Street, in a mostly residential neighborhood, a few blocks down from the Loudoun Homes housing project. I had expected something imposing, but it turned out to be a low, modest structure of red brick and angular windows, landscaped with evergreens and sculpted shrubs, and a small sign spiked into the grass, Free South Africa, written in simple block letters. Inside, the church was cool and murmured with activity. A group of small children waited to be picked up from daycare. A crew of teenage girls passed by, dressed for what looked like an African dance class. Four elderly women emerged from the sanctuary, and one of them shouted, "God is good," causing the others to respond giddily, "All the time." Eventually, I was led into Reverend Wright's office. He was in his late 40s, with silver hair, a silver mustache and goatee. He was dressed in a gray three-piece suit. "Sorry for being late, Barack," he said, closing the door behind him. "We're trying to build a new sanctuary, and I had to meet with the bankers. I'm telling you, Doc, they always want something else from you. Latest thing is another life insurance policy on me, in case I drop dead tomorrow. They figure the whole church will collapse without me." "Is it true?" I asked. Reverend Wright shook his head. "I'm not the church, Barack. If I die tomorrow, I hope the congregation will give me a decent burial. I like to think a few tears will be shed. But as soon as I'm 6 feet under, they'll be right back on the case, figuring out how to make this church live up to its mission."